Comments made on the Serotalk podcast are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotalk Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Welcome to the Serotalk podcast.
Welcome to the Serotalk podcast, your portal to the accessible digital lifestyle. www.serotalk.com, a production of Serotalk Corporation, makers of System Access, the System Access mobile network, and SA2Go. Learn about new technology, cool software, useful websites, education, information, entertainment, user comments, and much more. And now, here's your host, Michael Loff.
Welcome to Serotalk Podcast 65 for April 11, 2011. This is Michael Loff.
I'm Ricky Enger.
And I'm Joe Steinkamp.
Well, it's always interesting to see how blind people or things that blind people do are portrayed in the mainstream media. Like this article from Gizmodo is talking about how blind people see the internet. Basically, they've gotten Paul Schroeder from the AFB to talk about this a little bit. And essentially, the article is trying to describe to people who primarily use the internet visually what it's like to use the internet as a blind person. And it's not particularly dumbed down. I mean, it does talk about how if you are a visual user of the internet, your eye is going to be tracking for certain things. You know that the main stories are going to be somewhere in the middle of the page, and you sort of ignore the navigation at the top or the banners or whatever. And it talks about how blind people are able to accomplish the same thing through the use of assistive technology. For example, jumping by headings or getting used to the location of something on a site or the title of a link, that sort of thing. So it's a nice, very quick representation of how blind people view the internet. And there don't appear to really be any inconsistencies or things that made me cringe in this particular article, so it was good to see.
So perhaps something good for someone who's assisting someone who's newly blinded or someone saying, I can't use the internet, maybe it explains it.
Right, and not only that, but it's great for web developers because as they think about how they design their sites, you know, it's fairly easy to include things like headings and the markup or to decide not to use something which refreshes the page constantly. And just to have an article that, you know, presents in a very realistic way how this is done rather than saying those precious blind people use the internet and there are a couple of things that you can do to make it better. Why not make a talking site, you know, with a plugin that reads automatically or something like that? This just explores it from something that I think web developers can take something away from.
Well, sounds good. And check it out, folks, at serotalk.com. Joseph Monks is the first totally blind film director, and that has been verified, but he created a movie called The Bunker. It's a psychological thriller horror film on the kidnapping of a congressman's daughter, and he accepted the Achievement in Cinema Award at the Gasparilla International Film Festival. So we congratulate him on that accomplishment. He began losing his sight about, I believe, 9 or 10 years ago, so he continued his craft. And we always like hearing great stories like that. If you're looking for assistive technology careers, we found a link that's a good starting point. Rather than citing this long web link, we'll just refer you again to go to serotalk.com. So if you have an interest and knowledge and maybe want to move vertically or horizontally through the assistive technology industry, here's a portal to kind of get you started.
Over at serotalk.com in the show notes, you can also find this article from Reuters, which talks about some changes that have recently been made in what determines disability from an employment perspective. So if you are a corporation with more than 15 employees, you obviously do need to adhere to the Americans with Disabilities Act, and you need to take into consideration those employees that you have with disabilities. This group has actually been broadened quite significantly. For example, people who have episodic conditions like epilepsy, or maybe they've had cancer and it's in remission, they do still count as disabled people. So it's an interesting read, and you can check that out.
Well, speaking of interesting reads, there's a great article where four different tech experts kind of give their opinions on what they feel to be some of the top events to come out of CSUN 2011. One of the conclusions, something I've been saying, and I'm glad to see it echoed here, a lot of people felt the consensus is Google needs to update their API to allow better access to the underlying guts of the Android operating system. But Ricky, you were actually one of the four people in this article, so why don't you talk about that?
I was. Myself, along with Robin Spinks from the RNIB, Leonie Watson, who is a sort of web accessibility guru, and Kieran Kaja, who works for Adobe but is also a big tech enthusiast. We all got to present what we thought were the highlights and lowlights, if there were any, of CSUN. And DocuScan Plus was featured in this article by Mr. Kaja, and also Leonie Watson talked about HTML5, and everyone had something to say about the ubiquity of mobile devices and how companies were taking advantage of that ubiquity and designing things appropriate for that space rather than everything being put into specialized devices or even something on the PC. So check that out over at Sarahtalk.com.
Yeah, I believe it. They echoed a lot of the stories that we felt were big as well. And of course, we've had interviews with most of those entities. So check it out. Well, Beep Baseball, you may have heard of that. Actually began back in 1976 when AT&T Bell Labs actually came out with a ball. You would basically pull out this little cork and it would start beeping, and hence the game and the rules were created over 35 years ago. And in Tech Chat 96, we cover the game, the rules, and talk about the upcoming World Series that will be held in Indianapolis, Indiana on July 31st through August 7th. There are actually 19 teams, basically the U.S. and China. And as I said, that began back in 1976, and I actually played the first year when the game was introduced. And,
really?
Yes, I did, actually. So it was kind of cool to run to the buzzing cones and to stand in the field and try to get the ball before the person could move the 100 feet and get to the cones. And so cool stuff, Beat Baseball. We will be following that and maybe get some reports from the actual World Series and maybe find out, you know, how more people can participate if they like, or maybe start your own team in your community. U.S. health officials have approved a small telescope to be implanted into the eyes to help in the final stages of the incurable macular degeneration. Basically, what happens, the telescope is put into one eye for better central vision, while leaving the other eye for peripheral vision. What happens then is the brain must fuse these two views into one single image. So the Food and Drug Administration says that people must go through some post-surgery rehab to make this work, to understand the newly image that's created.
Right, and apparently this is available for only a subset of the population with macular degeneration. You do need to be 75 years of age or over, and you also need to require cataract removal along with the implant of this telescopic device. So right now, it's not clear why those two things are requirements, but for now, it is available for this particular group.
The FCC has extended the deadline for filing comments on the proposed video description rules that has been extended to April 28th, and then there'll be a period for follow-up comments, I believe, that goes till May 18th. But what they're obviously trying to do is restore video description, at least in some of the larger U.S. markets, like the top 25 markets. And again, I have a issue with partial mandates. But anyway, that's if you want to file your comments on that, please go get the link at serotalk.com or the newly designed fcc.gov.
It seems that tactile exploration and new technology to do that has been sort of a running theme in the last couple of podcasts. Now there is something called Tesla Touch, which is being developed. And essentially, this is a way that electrical pulses of sorts can be transmitted through a moving finger to simulate different types of touch. So this is completely different than having something that is, you know, say piezoelectric or some sort of more mechanical method of accomplishing raising lines and things like that on a diagram. So this technology is expected to be, you know, a little more versatile than something that's more mechanical. So you can use it on a smaller touchscreen or a much larger tablet type surface. And the idea is, again, to provide tactile feedback about things like graphs, charts, graphics, that sort of thing.
Very cool stuff there. Well, this is a pretty technical article, so I'm not sure, unless you're really developing websites or screen reading technology, or if you just like to read up and know what's going on, but it talks about the new Firefox 4 and how it addresses over 400 different accessibility bugs, MSA, and other parts of the browser.
Right. This was written primarily for the AT developer, but it's definitely a fascinating read for those of you who are pretty techie. And there's also a link in this article to the one which Marco Z published that is a little more consumer-oriented. It's for developers and users of Firefox 4 and talks about the major changes that have happened since Firefox 3 in terms of accessibility.
Perhaps the biggest news is the release of WebVism 0.8 to work with Firefox 4.0. Many people were holding off on the upgrade until that had come out. So if you were not aware of, it is definitely out there now, and you can get the link at serotalk.com. If you want to learn more about accessible cell phones, check out a new site created called accesswireless.org. It was created by the CTIA, Wireless Association. So a lot of good information there if you're trying to make sense of maybe you just want one of the more economical phones that only does voice and text. So check that out as well. Matt McCubbin reviews the Zoom Reader OCR for iPhone 4. Ricky, have you purchased that yet? Are you going to purchase it?
I haven't yet. I do intend to. I've spent so much money on OCR solutions that haven't worked that I figured I'd at least give myself till the weekend before I purchased this from AI Squared. It was released on April 5th, I believe. And while it has primarily been designed for the low vision market, and that's been made very clear by AI Squared, it is perhaps at least somewhat usable by a totally blind individual as well. Go ahead and check out Matt McCubbin's review of it, but he does talk about how there isn't any indicator of when a page has been focused properly and you don't get any feedback in terms of page orientation and that sort of thing. But with that said, he is able to get some usable results. Tech Access Weekly has also taken a look at the Zoom Reader. So there are a couple of different options if you're curious about what people think about the product and not sure that you want to purchase it yet. You might take a look at these two things and get some feedback from other users before you dive right in.
Well, a couple things that I learned out of this is that, if some of the buttons are unlabeled, this is something you can do to help a variety of different apps that may not talk as well as you would like. You can go in and turn on hints, not only for Zoom Reader, but other iPhone apps by going into Settings, General, Accessibility, VoiceOver, and then enable the Speak Hints option there. But also, I like the Tech Access Weekly comment, which is what I've been saying all along about trying to do any kind of scanning or recognition with the iPhone. The better the lighting, the better the results. And that's what we've got to figure out is what is the ideal lighting environment, you know, whether it's coming up with some recommended desk lamp or something that we should all purchase to get maximum scanning capabilities out of our phone.
Yeah, and what's interesting is that people are a little confused as to why the iPhone doesn't work so well for scanning. The 3GS is sort of understandable, but the iPhone 4 with a 5-megapixel camera, you know, 5 megapixels should, in theory, be enough to do some quality OCR. But there are differences in cameras. People have been talking about, well, what about the first versions of the KNFB reader? They were using a phone with a 5-megapixel camera, and it worked quite well. But it isn't just about the megapixels. It's about the flash, and it's about the method of autofocus that the camera uses, and some other things that apparently the iPhone just doesn't do well for OCR.
This sounds very interesting. You can actually hear or see a review of this with a direct link from Serotalk, but it's called Wearabraille. Yeah, it's a tabletop wireless keyboard is what they call it. Basically, you have accelerometers on your fingers, and you basically tap in Braille on your tabletop, and it feeds your iOS device as Braille input. And there's a great review of it. Ricky, do you have thoughts on this? This sounds really cool.
Yeah, it does sound very cool. We actually briefly mentioned this in the podcast a couple of weeks ago. I like the idea that they're showing this without any modifications to the iPhone. And it's something that's somewhat inconspicuous, I guess. You wear gloves on your fingers to make this possible, but I would think that would be even lighter than, say, something like the Braille pen or the EasyLink, rather, which is a Braille input keyboard, and certainly lighter than a standard Bluetooth keyboard. So I think it's a very neat idea.
Yeah, we'll be excited to see what comes of this. Well, many people using their iPhone have an app they like called Boxcar, and there's a beta of it now in the Mac App Store for those of you who own your Mac computers, iMacs, MacBooks, what have you. But the app is called Boxcar, and it allows you to get notifications of various things, including RSS feeds, maybe specific tweets like direct messages or any one of the categories. You can set it up for news headlines, so it can be a great RSS aggregator for you, instant messages, maybe even direct messages on Facebook, and more. Like I said, it's also available on iOS devices, but there's a beta out there if you want to play around with Boxcar and have all that stuff fed to your Mac desktop.
Google has finally published some accessibility documentation for Android developers. So now those who are using Android and would like a place to be able to point developers to when they say, this isn't accessible, here are some things that you can do to improve your app, this is going to make a great resource for those developers and for people who are using apps that are inaccessible to point someone to and say, hey, take a look at this. And these are some of the things that you can do using Google's current API, such as it is, to improve the accessibility of your app.
Most people who have been on Twitter certainly have seen all the, I guess what I can only call heated debate and discussion about Android versus iOS, but Access Anna actually has put up a great blog post on Android versus iPhone Access and kind of goes into great detail and hopefully should be informative for any of you trying to decide which of these two phone systems or operating systems you wish to go with and the benefits of each.
Yeah, what I like about this is that it was a very level-headed approach, and at times, debates on Twitter or elsewhere tend not to be so level-headed, and people are very committed to the platforms that they've chosen and seem to be insistent on making sure that everyone knows why their platform is the right one to choose. But I think there isn't a single answer as to which is the best platform, and this particular post explores all of those things, and it does it in a way that you as an individual can choose what you care about and choose your platform based on that.
Code Factory's mobile accessibility is now officially available. Of course, in the past, it was not ready to actually be purchased, but now you can purchase it for 69 euros. Last check, that was about $95 US. That, of course, will vary with the exchange rates, but you can check that out. And as you're trying to decide if Android is right for you or just want to learn more about it, Steve Sawson has started a blog called One Blind Person's Discovery of Android. And you can go read his information or email them directly at steve@sawson.com. That's steve@sawcyn.com. Check it out.
Mike Arrigo is doing a couple of podcasts. So if you're just not interested in reading blogs or if you just want some audio information to go along with that, you can check out these podcasts by him. He does a couple, one of which details the use of Android with its built-in accessibility. So this is talking about TalkBack. And the other explores mobile accessibility on the Android platform.
Well, how many of you would like to talk to your coffee maker? The Speak and Brew is a new 10-cup voice-operated coffee maker. And you can actually set the clock and brew time with your voice.
Can I say, Earl Grey, hot, and it'll do something?
Can you fetch me water, man?
This is actually a nice thing because if you want to be able to set the night before when your coffee pot goes off, so you don't have to stumble in there and push the button yourself, you'll be able to set the time on the coffee pot and set when it should go off and brew that life-giving caffeine for you.
Well, if you have or know someone with blind children, there are some free Braille books available, and we can't emphasize enough the importance of children learning to read Braille, despite what your local school district may tell you. But the Temple Bethel Sisterhood Braille Bindery will ship to any child's home or school anywhere in the U.S., any one of 1,100 children's books in Braille. And you can read more about that at blindbargains.com. If you're looking for cancer information in Braille, large print, MP3 audio, or even stuff on the website, the American Cancer Society has made their materials available in these formats with a little help from our friends at the ACB and their good old structured negotiations. So certainly cancer is something that affects all of us at one point or another, if not directly through family members or friends or acquaintances. So it is nice to see this information made available. And of course, the link at the American Cancer Society or direct link at serotalk.com.
Well, some of you may remember a podcast in which we discussed seeing with our tongues. We were talking about a device wherein you wave your tongue around. No, that's not at all how it works. You have video cameras mounted on glasses, and you also have this tongue-mounted device which sends electrical impulses to your tongue. And we talked about it a little, well, tongue-in-cheek, I guess, then, but this is actually coming to fruition, and it's being presented in May at a conference detailing several different clinical trials. And what they've done is they've taken a few blind people and trained them to use this device, and then they're going to show how these people make it through an obstacle course simply using the tongue device to detect certain things in the visual field, both central and peripheral vision. And it was interesting because in the initial training, they were able to go through the maze pretty quickly. And as they became more efficient, though, at recognizing some of these visual details, they actually slowed down and perhaps were, you know, a little bit hesitant because they sensed some things in the visual field and became concerned they'd run into them. So their overall speed decreased, but eventually they became comfortable enough with the device and the feedback that it was giving that they were able to raise their speed back to where it was initially. So this is actually a pretty fascinating device, especially the idea that a sensation on your tongue can mimic in some ways what you would perceive visually.
Yeah, if that goes right to the visual cortex of your brain, that's very interesting stuff. My concern always is these technologies that have, you know, three parts or maybe even more different pieces that you have to wear. Like a similar project here called NAVI, it's Navigation Aids for the Visually Impaired, where some German university students have kind of leveraged the 3D imaging capabilities of the Microsoft Kinect camera to actually detect objects outside of the reach of the white cane. The Kinect camera is placed on one's head, mounted to a hard hat with duct tape.
That is a tough thing. That thing's huge, actually.
Yeah, we were concerned about the fashion statement one might make with the eye
vibrating glasses. Yeah, yikes.
Yeah, Ambitex glasses. So you've got this hard hat and the camera mounted on there with duct tape. Then it's sent to a Dell laptop mounted in a backpack that you're toting around, which is in turn connected to an Arduino 2009 board that's glued to a fabric belt worn around the waist. And when an object is detected, the info is conveyed to one of three motors to tell you what direction it is. Then you tap on this a Bluetooth headset that also provides audio cues and can actually be used to provide navigation instructions and reading signs and markers placed on walls and doors. So again, more pieces. I mean, cool if it gives you some capabilities, but man, can you imagine tacking all that stuff on and then you get hit in a power thunderstorm? That's always my concern with the last two articles.
For the ultimate in mobility portability, don't use this.
A 6-foot cane in a rainstorm. It sounds like you're a knight getting ready for battle. There's a lot of great hacks coming out with the Microsoft Kinect. That's what's really neat about the idea that Microsoft allowed that to be, you know, messed with. But I don't know, guys. That sounds like a lot to carry. But at the same time, a couple of weeks ago, we talked about how GPS systems were a laptop and it took a lot to make them talk. And now they're in our phones. So, you know, anything is possible. But I don't think I want to be the user in the early trial here.
I don't know. With miniaturization of technology, it seems like everything could be mounted in this hard hat or something. You know, I mean, like an iOS device or something. You could get everything mounted in that hard hat.
Well, if we have big vibrating glasses.
Yeah. Well, what I always wonder is, how long have some of these projects been going on? You know, did somebody come up with the idea 4 or 5 years ago when technology wasn't so small and they thought, I don't want to give up on this particular vision of my project because this is what I thought of and I don't care that technology has advanced. I still want to do it this way. Yay for duct tape.
Well, in the case of the Microsoft Kinect, that would be November. So maybe that was just the catalyst.
Yeah, in this instant, I guess.
I mean, that's entirely possible. There are amazing Kinect hacks going around, and then Microsoft themselves actually will have an update this year that allow you to control your Netflix through Kinect. There have been people who are actually doing animated movies with motion capture just by having two Kinects, one on one side of the room and one on the other. And really quickly here, in case you're not a video game fan, the Microsoft Kinect uses a camera as well as kind of an IR way of capturing 48 different points on your body. It can actually detect your movement, so much so that people are hacking it now to be able to use sign language. The American Sign Language Association is looking into this for being able to do real-time translation for face-to-face conversations. So for a device that is $150, it's great for the homebrew market to go out there and hack and play with, because Microsoft allowed that to exactly do just that. They wanted people to play with it. Guys, breaking story real quick before we go. We want to thank everybody for their votes for the Blind Bargains Access Awards. Sarah Talk was the winner of the Best Blindness Podcast this year for the 2011 Blind Access Awards. And we definitely appreciate everybody for their voting.
We're very honored by that, and we're in good company, too. People like Fred's Head, who got the must-read blog and Twitter feed. Horizons for Me. Horizons for the Blind with Directions for Me. How's that? They won a couple of awards as well. So, again, thank you all for your votes. We appreciate it.
Yes, and we talked a little bit about a project called Tactile World. We'll let you know about that, about getting some enhanced information fed back to your fingers via a tactile mouse from the screen and other stuff. So stay tuned to the podcast and, of course, join us for our Thursday Tech Chats. A lot of good stuff coming up in May.
Thanks for listening.
We are speaking with Matthew and Julia Wool, along with Igor, about a project. The project is called Tactile Explorer, and you can learn more at the website of www.tactile-world.com. Kind of explain to our listeners exactly what is Tactile Explorer.
Tactile Explorer is a system for access to a computer and to the internet. A person who uses this can then have ability to work in an office or CRM programs. It's much smaller than existing equipment that's available, such as RBDs and so forth, and much cheaper. The total price of the package is $695. The size is a little bit bigger than a regular mouse that you would use on a computer.
This is different from anything that most of us are traditionally used to. This is a different tactile interface, is that correct?
Yes, because it has graphics. No other system actually can have access to graphics. With this, you can see the icons, you can see pictures, you can see diagrams, maps, many other educational purposes.
So as far as reading the contents of the screen, you would actually feel the shape of the printed typed characters as opposed to...
You can do that, but you can also have it text to Braille, or you can have it text-to-speech. It works in every method that is commonly used. It also has a gesture technology, which makes it possible to send signals to the computer just by moving the mouse. And it also makes it possible for a person using it to use the mouse as a toy in order to play games, like many of the modern gesture games that are played commonly.
Okay, so you say the price is going to come in at $695. How much of that's hardware? How much of it's software? How does that break down?
It's a package. It comes together. There's no separation.
Describe this mouse, the hardware component of it.
It looks like a regular, shaped like a regular mouse, but on the top of it, there are two areas which have braille cells on them that go, and you can feel the braille cells there. But instead of moving your hand on it like a RBD, you just hold the pins under your finger and the pins go up and down and you get the same sensation as if you were running your hand across RBD. Some of the advantages are that instead of having to stop at the end of each line or half a line, it can do a running reading through a sentence, a paragraph, a whole book if you want, without having to lift your fingers or stop and change.
So this is essentially one cell that just constantly updates?
Four cells. There are two tactile displays, each for one fingertip. On each display, there are 16 pins which go up and down approximately in the same way as on a refreshable braille display. But they're not separated for two braille cells. They're integrated in one tactile display. So one tactile display for 16 pins, another 16 pins. And this is on the top of a regular computer mouse. When you move this mouse, cursor is moving around the screen. And depending on information under the cursor, it can be translated or not. It depends on user. To braille. If it is graphic under the cursor, it will be translated to black and white image. It means that pins corresponding to black color, for example, will be up and to white color will be down. Okay? So all the time when you move mouse, you have feedback on this tactile display.
But what versions of Windows are operating systems are supported right now?
7 and Vista and XP. Tactile Explorer is a hardware tactile mouse and the software, which is a really screen reader. It reads from the screen information, okay? Not like a regular screen readers which read from file or from website or from page and so on. This reads from the screen. There are two different issues. One issue is navigation, for example, navigation bar, menu bar, title bar, and so on. Okay, buttons, menu items, and so on. Another issue is a tactile sensation of exact contents of the display. We separated these two problems. In one more, Tactile Explorer serves for navigation, so you can find anything currently in the screen, and after that, switching to reading mode, you see what it is, or text, or graphics, and so on. Anytime you can switch between these two modes, okay? In navigation, you are looking for something in screen. In reading mode, you see this.
Okay, so what are the limitations with the technology, certain apps that it just is not working with today?
In technology, we have no limitation because we developed a lot of software parts, and as Matthew said, we have special tactile games for the blind, okay, with this mouse. A blind user can play, really play game, of course, with sound, with all other effects, but receiving information in tactile form, as blind people do it in their regular life. Okay? We have a lot of developed software. We have this mouse, And for production process, we need switch to production, to manufacturing.
Okay, well, get that in a minute. So what about an app like Skype?
Any information from the screen you will see in Skype, you can switch between buttons in Skype. You can switch contact list and so on. When you found, for example, your new friend Igor Karasin, you will see this text in Braille, or static Braille, or running Braille, okay? Or, of course, you can listen to this, and you can click the button on the mouse, as sighted people do it, and go with this, your friend, switch to another friend, switch between windows, different parts of Skype window, and so on.
Yeah, I wanted to suggest that when we get to CSUN, maybe you would be able to take a look at it and get a good idea of how it works. We've been looking to locate somebody at CSUN area to train them. It takes 3 days to learn to use this completely. Igor is going to be there early to find somebody to work with us. We need two people to go to the booth and make displays. We did this when we were in India. We had two people who met with us, and Igor trained them for 3 days, and then they made the presentation in the booth there. Of course, we paid them, so we're glad to show you how it works also.
You've been doing this now a few years, and you've received some nice recognition and awards, but you're now at the point you need funding to go to the next level for manufacturing and making this a reality and something that all of us can put into our hands. So talk about that.
What we're looking for is some initial funding to get started with the manufacturing process to help design some molds and other indirect things that are needed for the manufacturing process. That would take about $500,000 to get everything in place. In order to manufacture and become independent over a two-year period, we would need to have a total of $3 million. It's not something we need up front. It's something we need to pay to the manufacturers. They would then produce the product and sell it. As the sales go ahead, it would become independent. $695 is the initial sales point, but we hope with some of the new ideas that Igor has to be able to reduce that even further, significantly further, for almost anybody. Many of the governments of emerging countries would be able to afford to produce it for their people. This is the price not on a mass-produced basis, but just on a standard manufacturing basis.
Now, I'm sure some of our listeners will be asking if you're looking for any beta testers. I assume you probably already got that covered, but if
we have a number of beta testers that are working with us now, we are not looking for beta testers yet. But once we get started with the additional funding, then we will be able to do beta testing in different locations. Of course, this system can be used in any language, whether it's anywhere around the world. It takes a week or two to convert the system to a different language. Right now, it's only in English.
Okay, so when you say it takes 3 days to train, kind of explain that process, what is involved, what do we have to get our head around before we can really understand this and fully utilize it and convey it to others?
To make a full-scale presentation in the booth, we need a person who first reads Braille in tactile form. But reading Braille in our case differs from regular way reading from refreshable Braille display. And therefore, this guy has to be able to adjust himself for reading in a little bit different way. Next problem, this guy has to understand tactile graphics. What does it mean? For example, simple shapes like circle, ellipse, rectangle, square, parallel line, horizontal line, vertical line, and so on. When this person will understand this, he will be able to show. And of course, in this process, the demonstrator has to learn several our tactile games to show it to people. Okay, we plan to put one system which runs automatically, and everybody can come and start playing game independently. And this process will be continuing during the whole presentation. But our presenter has to understand and help if it is necessary to other people. Okay, because you understand that most of our visitors will be blind. Somebody has to understand, to explain them what this mouse looks like, where is one of four buttons, where are two tactile displays, and so on. It can be shown during a very short time. We have very big experience in presenting this system in different shows. In India, there were two guys which learned during less than 3 days, and after that they made presentations for visitors and in conferences. Both of them were blind, but they did it wonderful, and it's not so difficult. Because use of this tactile mouse is very close to regular life of the blind.
Let me ask you something. Do you have to be fully in Windows for the Tactile Explorer? Well, that's the hardware, but for the actual software to work. And the reason I ask this is many people, like myself, like to either do computer repair, build a new installation of Windows or something. So do you have to be in Windows, or is this something maybe they could even run from a safe mode to help people diagnose and troubleshoot problems?
Well, for now, we rely on any other so-called screen readers. For example, for JOS, we have two versions of Tactile Explorer. One version is full version, which includes, as I said, navigation mode and reading mode, and another version is on to JOS. In this case, JOS and our system works in parallel. Okay, a user switches between these two systems, navigates, for example, in JOS, listens all announcements in JOS. If he wants to see graphics, he puts hand on our mouse, and immediately the system automatically switches to graphics mode. It goes back. So all these problems, like running in this mode and that mode, opening windows, looking for files, and so on, it can be done or inside our system or using traditional, for example, JOS. Yes, for now, you have to be in Windows, yes.
Would there be any plans of looking at any other operating systems down the road once you get up to speed and get your funding and get manufacturing, either Linux or on the Mac side, or you're really going to stay in Windows at this point?
For now, we created our software on basis of Microsoft. For now, it works only under Windows.
But in the future, the sky is the limit. We will be happy if we have funding to make our system compatible with Mac or with Linux and so on.
Or I'm even thinking of things like Windows Server 2008 for IT professionals who maybe need this technology. Maybe they're programming and they're doing things on the server.
Whatever, it's everything, it's only the issue of computer programming.
But it's really, Julia is right, not a big problem, because we use only standard extraction information from the screen. So we can do it under any operating.
Now, you mentioned interfacing with JAWS. Does that mean it can work with any screen reader, or will a screen reader manufacturer, such as our own System Access, would we have to work with you to build a bridge between the two?
Why we use JAWS? Because they developed a script language, and therefore we use the scripts to integrate them. Our integration is very simple. What does it mean to integrate with? First of all, our system works in parallel with any other software. And secondly, we need to know when user put his, for example, hand on our mouse. In this moment, we stop talking. When he issues command, go back, we stop talking and moving our mouse. And JAWS became enabled again.
Will you actually have a booth or presence where people can get a hands-on?
58.
How can people contact you, assist, or have some ideas for funding and getting this thing off the ground?
Contact us through our website,
which is tactile-world.com. Do you have a specific email
yes.
address, like matthew@tactile-world.com or something like that, where people can...
Yes.
We thank you for taking the time to share this exciting innovation. All right, thank you.
Thank you very
thank
much.
Thank you.
Okay.
This is Rodney and
Aaron
from TechAccessWeekly.com reporting for Saratalk on the new Zoom reader for iPhone 4 by AI Squared. This is an abridged version of our daily tip that you can find the full version on our website, where we actually give you information on how to use third-party apps in order to improve your OCR results.
A couple things to keep in mind. At this point, this app is optimized for the low vision. This means that there are some buttons, if you are using VoiceOver and Totally Blind, that are unlabeled. The only way you will be able to know what they are at this point is to enable VoiceOver hints, which you can do by going to Settings, General, Accessibility, VoiceOver, and turning on hints. AI Squared is working on a fix for this. Another thing to keep in mind is that Zoom Reader uses a lot of processing power. So if you have VoiceOver on and Zoom Reader on, it impacts the performance of both apps since they are both fighting for resources. This means that VoiceOver sounds a little bit choppy. There is a distinct hum when scanning with Zoom Reader, and its image processing and speech output are slowed down. Wouldst thou like to demonstrate the app?
Why, yes. Go figure.
I think what we'll do first is we'll turn on VoiceOver to show you what the screen is like, if you have hints enabled, what the different buttons are.
And I will quickly triple tap the home button.
VoiceOver on.
Okay. I open up Zoom Reader with VoiceOver. It's not really saying anything. It basically has a open view of your camera. On the screen in the top left corner, you have
button speech control on. Tap to
Speech control is so that you can actually speak commands. Instead of having to actually click the camera button to take the picture, you can say capture or take picture or the simplistic click. In the top right corner below your battery is going to be
button light and flash controls. Double tap to change.
And I'm going to go in there.
Button.
And what you will have in here is button. Four buttons across the bottom of your screen. And selected. You'll be able to button, control flash, the flash. Button. So you'll be able to turn the flash on all the time, which is going to greatly drain the battery. You can turn it greatly off so that it doesn't do anything. And you can set it to auto. So you've got four settings here as far as what you can do. So tap the center of the screen and it goes away. There is a slider. If I can make it speak.
Camera zoom control, 0%, adjustable.
So
swipe up or down to adjust the value.
This basically will zoom in and out on the picture. You can either slide it up and down to zoom, or if you have the voice enabled, you can say zoom in or zoom out. You also have
button, choose photo library. Tap to select.
Choose photo from library. Double tap to select.
Yeah. So this
button
is going to open up your camera roll.
Photo library 7. Camera roll 240.
This feature will actually allow you to pull in a picture that you have scanned with another program, which I have been finding very useful.
Photo albums heading. Photo albums heading.
I would like cancel to get out button of this. Cancel. Thank you. You also
speech
have
control on. Double tap to change button color filters. Tap to
okay, so the color filters button will actually give you a set
button color filters.
There we go. It'll give you a set
color
of
filter
six or seven
button
different filters that you can apply to the screen. So you can change the text to black on white, white on black, yellow on black type
ew
of thing. I haven't really found that useful. It helps more once you have actually scanned something so that you can see in a different contrast what you want. So currently, these buttons,
color filter button,
do not really tell you what the color filter is going to be. All I can say is that the far right edge of the screen is going to give you
button. No.
For some reason, my VoiceOver is chopping off. I'm not exactly sure why that's happening, but it says no filter.
Close photo filter select.
Okay, now we've closed that. I am going to very quickly just scan something for the heck of it.
Button.
In the bottom center.
Capture photo. Double tap to capture.
Is going to be your scan button.
Process.
So it tells you that it's ready. On this screen, you can do a save, which will save the image to your photo library. That will be up in the top right corner. And then
OCR button, speak the text in the image.
So on this button, you can actually tell it to do the OCR. If you have the voice commands turned on, you will be able to actually say read, and it will actually do the OCR for you.
OCR button, OCR, back, dim,
text
button.
Ready.
Okay, now that we have been through the extraction process, we have some text on the screen. You can do a back, which is in the top left corner, and you can also do settings. Under settings.
Settings. Button.
I don't know how much she's going to say.
Yeah.
Cancel. Button.
On the settings page, you have the opportunity to change.
Font size. Font size settings option.
You can change your font size settings so that you can go from a small to a very large font if you want to actually read it on the screen. You can also change the highlighting. As the program reads, it is going to highlight the text. Either the background or the foreground color can change based on one of the settings that you have here.
Rows 225 of 5.
You will be able to also change the
speech
pitch.
Speech rate slow. Speech rate medium. Speech rate fast. Speech rate.
Thank you. I should just let her do this. You can change the speech rate, slow, medium, high. If you're using your finger, you can sort of get it in different places. Currently, it seems like this really doesn't do anything other than raise the pitch on this screen.
Voice, Tom, voices.
You
voice settings option.
Get the wonderful Tom from Nuance. And
button.
You will be able to actually go into a section where you can purchase either German, French, or Spanish voices.
Or other English voices.
Or other English voices for $2.99.
They're not available for purchase yet.
Yeah, they released the product without having Apple's permission to sell the app. So if you click on it, it will give you an error when trying to purchase.
Back.
So you can select from that.
Cancel. Button.
Thank you. So I am going to turn off VoiceOver. Triple click.
Alert. Accessibility options. Turn voiceover off.
In front of me, I have three different documents. I have a document that is an 8.5 by 11 piece of paper. I have a newspaper, which has very fine print on it from one of our local papers here. And I also have, from the wonderful ATM test lab at work, a ATM receipt so that we can actually show a couple different things with that. So I am going to take the document, put it on the table. I have a desk lamp directly above me to give decent light. Okay, I have taken a picture of this document.
Image ready.
And Tom is ready. So now I just have to hit on the bottom center of the screen. I need to hit the button to extract the text. And if you hear a little humming in the background of this process, you're probably hearing the iPhone because it sort of gives a little feedback when you're actually trying to record it. Yes. And I will say that when extracting images, the
text ready.
When extracting images, the battery is going to drop considerably when it's trying to extract images. Also, the phone will actually get pretty warm. So you will take into account that. So probably part of that hum that we were just hearing that I heard disappear was actually the CPU of the phone.
Oh, my God. Dear Lord.
Yes, we need Julie around for, oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, let's see what we got on the speak.
Top Tech Tidbits Volume 297, The Week's News and Adaptive Technology Distributed by Flying Blind, LLC HTTP. /www.f1y1ngb19.com To make certain you receive each volume of Top Tech Tidbits, please add news@f1ngb19.com to your address book. If you experience any problems reading this newsletter, you can access this volume of Top Tech Tidbits on the web at http://www.f1y7ngb19.com/t1dB1TS20LL/0224200LL/1DX.
Okay, so basically what happened there is I pressed the speak button in the bottom middle of the screen, and it began to read. It highlighted the text as it's going down the page. This 8.5 by 11 page actually was scanned completely, all the way down to the page one indicator. There are problems with the OCR, like missed characters, strange numbers that shouldn't be there, which it, I guess are kind of an OCR glitch.
Yeah, it's quite common to have I's and L's come out as ones. I mean, you know, it's not, it doesn't happen all the time, but it's not uncommon and not surprising. Explain how you held the page in relation to the camera.
I have the page laying down on a desk. There is nothing around it so that there is actually a distinct edge. I was holding it probably about a foot to a foot and a half above the paper.
The camera itself, was it in the center of, yes. ish of the paper?
Yes.
And where was it positioned in relation to the desk lamp?
It is about parallel to the desk lamp.
Okay.
So it comes out with a pretty good scan. What I'm going to do real quick here is I am going to go under settings, and I'm going to increase the reading
speed
to fast. And I'm clicking the save button, and now I am going to read again.
Top Tech Tidbits, Volume 297, The Week's News and Adaptive Technology, distributed by Flying Blind.
LLC.http://www.f1y1ngb19.com
to make certain you receive each volume of Top Tech Tidbits. Please add a news at f1ngb19.com to your address book. If you experience any problems reading this newsletter, you can access this volume of Top Tech Tidbits on the web at, http://www.
Okay. So I'm going to change that back to normal so that Tom isn't Alvin. And this will actually prove that it did actually scan a full page. The only thing that I haven't figured out is if you can actually position yourself in the page in order to start reading at a different point.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, it seems like if you click somewhere, it doesn't start at that point. So that's a little bit of a irritation if you stop it and then have to go back to start reading again. You are able to share your documents by either sending an email, copying it to your clipboard, or emailing the actual picture that you did take. So that's your three options as far as being able to save the text. I have practiced that a few times and sent emails, and that's pretty easy because it will open your default email app. Now, I have before me a newspaper. Wonderful ancient newspaper that gets your hands all dirty and everything that probably a lot of people don't read much anymore. I am going to try and scan a column here using Zoom Reader, and I am going to position it directly over the column that I want.
And how wide is the column?
The column is probably 4 inches wide.
How?
It's a very
small is the font?
It's probably about a 6 or 7 point font.
Okay. And you're holding it how far?
8 to 10 inches, possibly. Probably closer to 7 or 8 inches, I guess it would be.
Image ready.
Okay. This picture that I have just taken, I zoomed in on the newspaper column just a little bit in order to get the picture clear. Holding it about 6 to 10 inches away, varying just a little bit because of the zoom. And let's see what we come up with as it extracts.
Text ready. L cap, cap, comma cap, hyphen. Camp Raleigh supporters, Elway County's Loy Noir Student Assignment Policy, which used students to improve OSHA economic diversity across the system, are scratched on to respond to new data released. This week, HAT suggests LIT the diversity policy may have had a negative effect on the educations of minority students. School officials presented data this week showing that the academic performance of elementary and neglect school students who are reassigned to clinical diarth those students traveled to school. The data were part of an attempt to show federal investigators that the school board had good reason to scrap the diversity policy. It analyzes student achievement.
Had a few problems at the beginning because there's a slight graphic above the column and a few issues because newspaper print is not the clearest and smoothest of papers, so you're not really going to get a crisp viewpoint like you would with the paper. So now I'm going to scan a very narrow image, which is an ATM receipt, and I'm going to place it directly in the fluorescent light, and we will scan it one more time.
Image ready.
I bet that is the CPU.
Yeah, the phone is getting very, very warm by doing all of this.
Text ready.
Here is my receipt results.
First Citizens Bank 04/OIHI05H4S4FTTL000 star transaction at Diebold Test ATM ATM Test Lab NC00000 April 1st 11 business date, Key serial amount 008920. OQ terminal owner fee 2.00 total WDL 22.00 withdrawal from checking.
So the only problems that I see with this receipt is the fact that there are probably about 10 pound signs, number signs, you know, across there. And it did not quite know what to do with some of those. But everything else is crystal clear. It isn't smart enough to tell you that it's 22.00. It kind of misses the decimal, even though the decimal is showing on the scan. So what this transaction was is a $20 withdrawal with a $2 surcharge and a total of $22 being withdrawn from the customer's account. So there are three possible options for this demonstration using the Zoom reader.
In general, we were very impressed with this app, and for a version 1, AI Squared should be commended for doing a pretty good job with it. However, there are areas in which we feel this app can be improved for future versions. First off, the app would have probably gotten a warmer reception from the totally blind community if the issue with the buttons and voiceover was fixed at the very beginning. So if you were able to hear what the buttons were, without having to enable voiceover hints, that would have been a good thing. And we do understand that they are fixing this in an upgrade soon. One other thing that we feel they could fix is to try and use the iPhone's resources more efficiently. The iPhone has a 1 gigahertz processor and 512 meg of RAM. And in comparison to other scanning apps that we have tried, Zoom Reader appears to be using this really, really heavily. And perhaps they could make a little more efficient use of it so that VoiceOver and Zoom Reader can work together more effectively. Also, it would be nice if they had some audio feedback so that if you are a totally blind user, you will hear a beep if the image is in the correct focus to be scanned by the camera.
Sort of like what they use for SayText.
Yes.
And in using third-party apps, we found that filters were very useful. If they would be able to maybe add a clarity filter or something to brighten the image that you have scanned, that might be something that would be additional. That is something I demonstrate in the full version of this demonstration on our website. And the fact that there is not any help. When you actually load up the Zoom Reader application, you're just at the opening screen. If you really do not know what you're getting into, there's no help button or settings on that first screen. So it might be a good thing if they actually had a splash screen at the beginning and a help document that you could get to, as well as some settings, and then maybe a button to say, let's scan or something. That would probably really help as far as giving this particular product a grade. We probably, with these issues or suggestions, probably give it about a B+, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I'd say about a B+. And I will commend AI Squared also for being very responsive to emails and tweets about this app. So I think that they are willing to listen and make improvements.
And on our next episode of Tech Access Weekly, we are planning to have a little discussion with Doug Hacker of AI Squared. So you may want to check that out over at techaccessweekly.com. That should be out sometime late Wednesday or Thursday. This is Rodney and
Aaron
of techaccessweekly.com reporting for Saratalk on the Zoom Reader for iPhone 4 by AI Squared.
You've been listening to Saratalk. Visit us at www.saratalk.com. Send us an email at resources@saratalk.com or leave a voicemail at 866-997-BLAB. That's 2522.
We may read your email or play your voicemail in the next podcast. Join us in 2 weeks as we explore all that life and the internet have to offer. Until then, may you have an accessible digital life.